You're listening to Your Daily Dungeon, a Dungeons & Dragons podcast by Your Daily Nerd.
Hey, 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 adventurers. Welcome back to Your Daily Dungeon. I think we took a break. We had some family troubles, and now we're putting an episode on a holiday schedule as well, so... It's just a crazy recording time, but it's good to be back and kind of be back in the swing of things. I believe we last left off with you guys going about your business in town. Amnon and the gang got a job to do from the innkeeper Irwin. Is that correct, Kyle?
Yes.
And then, in addition to that, while we're still in town, I believe Mel is being stalked to the coffin maker shop by DJ. Let's pick up there.
Oh, yeah. It's been a while. I forgot that I was doing that.
Yeah, you were doing some shady shit.
What was I doing? I was looking for a skeleton. That's what I was doing.
Yeah, and I'm just following him, right? He doesn't know that I'm following him, right?
And DJ got ordered to follow me.
I'm just following him, right? Like, he doesn't know I'm following him.
He has no idea. The last time I remembered your role was far superior to that of Mel's.
Right. Okay, good. I just realized I said follow him like 5 times in 30 seconds, so my bad.
I think you rolled like a 27 or you rolled 1 above your perception.
I think I had an eerie suspicion that somebody was following me, but every time I turned around, I couldn't see anything.
Yeah, he must have rolled just 1. Yeah.
I think that was it. We'll have to watch the episode.
We're also playtesting a new recording method in which Eric and I sit in the same location and record off of one microphone. So, if there are any technical issues and things like that, blame Kyle.
Yep.
Thanks.
Always.
It's usually Kyle's fault whenever there's technical issues anyway.
Not at all Adam's potato computer.
Yeah. Why can't Adam get a new computer? Because Kyle.
Hey, you know, there's actually a popular show about Adam on Netflix called Adam Ruins It. Oh, well, not quite the same, but still the same idea. Adam ruins everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's not wrong.
Alright. So, Mel, you are walking your way across town, meandering your way through the muddy quagmires of the streets, kind of making your way past all of these Germanic-style homes with, like, these plaster white walls and wooden door frames, and you can see some small amounts of artwork on the windows as well. The town is doing a little bit better than everywhere else you've seen it forever. People still kind of have dour expressions on you as they pass, but for the most part, even though they all look a little, you know, grumpy, they don't look like they're trying to survive day to day. They're doing okay.
Nice. I'm very happy for the town, but I'm on a mission. To find a skeleton.
Alright, so you are walking through the city, and you come across this uninviting shop. It's 2 stories tall, and has a sign shaped like a coffin above the front door. All the window shutters are closed up tight, and there's a deathly silence around the establishment, in stark contrast to the kind of mild chit-chat of the streets.
Well, I'm gonna go open the door. Is it like a kind of like a shop where I can just walk in?
So as you approach it, you notice it's a very nice intricate handle. It's made of brass, about a foot and a half or so in length, and with like a nice like click knob on top. So you like click that, you depress like a little lever, and then you hear a clunk sound as you go to push it, and it creaks inwards into the building. DJ, you see Mel approach this shop and kind of meander his way in. What do you do?
I slowly meander my way in as well.
Alrighty.
Attempting to not be noticed.
We're going to go ahead and keep your stealth check from the previous moment. So DJ, you kind of zip in behind Mel and you enter into this coffin shop. Let's see here. So you come into it's a rectangular shaped building, about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, about 55 feet across, from front end to back and 10, 20, 35 or so feet wide.
Okay.
You enter in through if you're looking at a rectangle, you enter into the top right, which is like the largest section of the coffin. It looks like it's the coffin storage space as well.
Okay.
This, I guess you could call also kind of like the storeroom. Like, people come in here. It's not like a store. You don't go in here to like, ooh, look at all these nice coffins. Yeah. No, people don't come. They're all basically wooden coffins. They're not fancy. They're kind of arranged haphazardly about the floor in this musty, it's like an L-shaped room. The L portion of it is kind of like inverted, and if you like were to take your index and thumb and point your thumb down on the ground and point your index straight out, that's the L shape. And you're entering in from the top right.
Okay.
DJ, you duck in and you see a coffin directly to your left, kind of perched up on a little stand.
Okay.
So you duck behind this coffin as Mel enters into the room.
Okay.
So the door shuts and you hear a kind of disgruntled from one of the rooms as you hear the sounds of tools being set down and the sounds of padding, the wood creaking with every footstep. It's kind of hurried, but with long strides, meaning that he sounds like he's tall. You can tell that he's tall just by the thump, 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 thump of long strides. He opens up the door, which is at the bottom left side of this L, and basically the bottom left side of your thumb, if you were to look at it like that. And he kind of like pokes his head out and sees that you're there. He takes a couple of glasses off of his face and sets them down, hanging off like these little hooks. Not hooks, but like a chain off his neck.
Yeah.
He's wearing like an apron, and he's got like this nice long leather overcoat and a white cummerbund sticking out from underneath the apron, and like a white lapelled shirt. He's got long, long hair that goes down to his shoulders that's neatly combed over the back of his head. Full. And he's got a big full beard that comes to a rounded point that kind of sits as though his chin's extended a full 2 feet down. He's got a ridiculously long beard. Nice. And he's got very serious eyes and a mustache that kind of like curls down into his beard and like twists into two elaborate braids.
Okay.
So I at first I don't, I kind of like see him, but I don't really take notice of him. I kind of like admire the coffins, make it seem like I'm browsing.
Mm-hmm.
But and kind of wait for him to walk out, walk towards me.
So you see him you see him eyeball you, and he says, "Can I help you?"
Look at sir. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Mel. What's your name?
Heinrich. His lips kind of like rolled up in his name, indicating almost a bit of thorn or bite to the word, like he's troubled to even speak to you.
Heinrich. Well, it's nice to meet you, Heinrich.
The feeling is not mutual.
Alright.
How can I help you? He steps out the room fully, shuts the door behind him.
Well, I'm actually looking for something in particular. I don't know if you'd be able to help me with this, but I'm looking for a skeleton.
There's no good way to phrase that. That is an episode title right there. I'm looking for a skeleton.
He looks at you with a bit of curiosity in his eye, and he says, "Well, you know, that is a very interesting thing to go searching for in Barovia. Why do you want one?"
I have my reasons. Nothing dark or evil there.
You see his eyes kind of like flutter as his head rotates left to right slightly. a bit shocked, and he says, "I did not see anything about Ethan."
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, well, then let Tom bring it up again.
You okay? Sure, I can show you where I keep the dead. If that is what you need.
Perfect.
He motions for you to follow him as he turns immediately to his right and grabs a handle and opens up a door to a stairway that leads up.
Alright, I'll go ahead and follow him.
And I'm sneakily following them.
Okay. You're able to do so with the DJ.
Sweet.
So, Mel, you ascend the stairs with this man, and he comes up to a, I guess what you could say is a small, like, landing at the top of this stairwell with a door to his left and his right. You see him as he kind of gets to the landing. He hesitates, looking at each door with some thought behind it before he reaches to the right handle and grabs it and opens it.
All right. I follow him, man.
You come into a small room with a table that's eating up the bottom corner of the room. It's about a little less than 10-foot table, like an 8-foot table or so. It's a square with four chairs seated at it. It looks like this is probably where they came to discuss the burial rites and like the details of purchasing the coffin and so on and so forth. You see, there's a small, not kitchen-like area, but like where he prepares like drinks, like tea or something like that. To heat some foods. You see there's a couple of beakers and things there for him to heat various liquids as well. You see a couple of pots of like sugar and spices and a cabinet row across the top as well. So he sets you down and he motions for you to take a seat and says, "Let me go to my room. I'll be right back."
All right. All right. Sit down. Patiently wait.
Okay. So, DJ, you come up to the lip of this door, and you see Mel kind of, like, take a seat and kind of, like, look. I guess he's examining the room, just kind of interested in maybe all the wood. It's very fine.
It's very like, what?
It's very fine woodworking. The house is finely made on the inside, in almost stark contrast to how plain and crude the regular coffin. Like, his work and his house are two completely separate entities, almost.
Wow.
That's interesting.
You hear some shuffling in his room, the sound of a clatter of metal, and a curse in Barovia shoot out. As you hear him go, "Oh, noise, my back. Okay." He opens the door to his bedroom and comes back out with a key ring and a couple of keys. And he says, "I go get, you want? What do you want to party? Are you some sort of scientist, professor, perhaps?"
Yes, you could say that.
Roll a deception check.
I don't feel like that's deception.
You're not a professor.
He said scientist.
You're a wizard, not a scientist.
If there was that's a form of... How many times have we had this discussion, Ian?
Arcanology is
different. Oh, wait, no, that's like technology. Like, yes. Fine.
He's studying, like, this, like, sciences. You're studying magic. Science does not need to exist in D&D because magic does its job.
And he's just like,
"Hold a 14.
I'm not a scientist."
14 on perception.
I'm going to have to look at a stat block. He cocks an eyebrow at you with some suspicion and nods his head and says, "All right then, Mr. Scientist, would you like full grown? Or a small body for cadaver?"
I mean, average sized human.
He kind of like looks at you.
Doesn't have to be extraordinary. Doesn't have to be a 6-foot tall person or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing too extravagant. Just
sure. So he kind of like moves his way past you, heading in your DJ. What do you do? Do you want to retreat back down the stairs? He starts heading in your direction. You're standing in the stairwell at the top of that landing. Do you want to retreat back down the stairs, try to hide in the stairs, or do you want to try to dart into the other room?
I want to try to... I just want to try and hide, stay out of his sight.
All right. Well,
Do what?
You're standing in an open lit stairwell, so hiding will be difficult as soon as he walks in the hallway and sees you, you know, laying pressed down against the stairs.
And you said there's a, like, another room I can dash into, maybe?
Yes.
Okay, I want to try and hide in there.
Alrighty. So, you quickly move over to the door and squeeze it open. And you enter into this large, drafty room, and it's strung with cobwebs and takes up most of this upper floor, you notice. You see stacks of wooden planks lie amid several crates marked junk.
Okay. I don't particularly want to look through this room, but I mean, do I see anything just, I guess, particularly interesting, like that's obvious? Amongst the junk, or what's labeled as junk?
Do you see anything obvious laying amongst the junk? Nothing in particular. It looks like it's just kind of like old junk accumulated over the years that Heinrich is keeping in here.
Okay. DJ's not, he's not really concerned about what's in the room. He just wants to hide from the dude. So.
Alrighty. So it looks like for the most part there's only crates to hop in behind. Stuff for you to like climb in. So this is a long room, pretty much taking up the entire length of the house on the top floor, and it's all a similar L shape, just a little thinner. It's the same upside down L shape.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I guess does he walk by?
What do you take? Are you gonna just stand out in the open? What do you try to hide?
Oh, I just try to hide behind some of the junk, I guess.
Alrighty. Go ahead and give me another stealth check now that you mentioned into a new room and you're attempting to actively hide from him seeing you in here.
Okay. Just give me 1 second. 10.
24. Alright, so you dip into some of the junk?
Yep.
Okay. So,
hold on, I'm sorry, did you say plus 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome to being a rogue.
Yeah, I also heard that and had the same reaction. So,
he enters into the room, walks over to one of the crates in the back of the room, opens it up. You see him kind of like, it sounds like he's lifting something with great exertion. And you hear the sense of dirt kind of being shuffled around as he lifts up what looks to be like an entire human body. And it just took a square crate out of the back room and just kind of like dumps the crumpled body onto like a small like gurney. Kind of like throws a couple of the arms up on top of it, letting one of the legs sag off the side of it anyway. And he kind of like takes up a shawl or like a small piece of like leather and throws it over the face of the body before shaking his head and saying something in Barovian.
Okay.
Am I in the room with him?
No, this is a separate room.
Yeah, I'm assuming I don't understand what he said.
Where you were, unless you chose to follow him. Yeah. So, he wheels the body past you, DJ, and out the room, and he shuts the door, and you hear the sounds of the tumbler lock.
Oh, fuck. Oh, that's great.
So he walks over and opens.
Hold up. Worst rogue ever.
Or the best rogue ever. That's the
whatever. It's just a locked door. I can open it.
Oh no.
You say that now.
I believe in the me that believes in me.
Kyle, I approve of your script for this episode's open title. I'm looking for a skeleton.
You have to put the ellipsis in there to make it really see, like, I am looking for a skeleton.
So, he just enters the room with you, Mel, with a gurney at his back. And you see him kind of study you for a second, and he says, What are you getting? Is it you need the
a skeleton, preferably?
Hey, Ian.
At this time, I asked you to look away from my laptop.
Oh, I'm looking away.
Like permanently. Don't look at my laptop.
Oh. Hey, just so you know, Ian, I am I'm trying to eavesdrop on this conversation.
Give me a perception check. It's not a particularly well-insulated house, so with a pretty proper one, you might be able to hear something.
Okay. So just roll d20?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey! 18.
18, huh? So 18. You have a very faint listen.
Okay.
You hear the sounds of what must be like nails slowly clittering across the ceiling above you.
Okay.
Do you look up?
Yes, Ian. I look up.
What's your stealth check?
Want me to roll stealth? No, it was 24 before. It was 24.
What did I roll there?
Yeah, it's off.
Once again, by the skin of your teeth, DJ, you look up and you see five vampires, or perhaps vampire spawn, you're not sure at this moment, clattering their way across the ceiling of the coffee maker shop as they kind of like walk over to the door, crawling across it, chittering and making kind of like hissing noises at the same time before very quietly opening the door and clambering their way out to the hallway.
There's vampire spawn.
Or vampire.
Vampires going into that room where Mel is.
Into the hallway.
Into the hallway.
Into the stairwell, yeah.
But the more important thing, the door's unlocked now, right?
Yeah, it looks like one of them locked the door.
Okay. Deja's going to stealthily try and see what's going on. But first, he's going to make sure there aren't any more of those guys in the room.
Yeah, you don't see any more.
All right, he's going to go and very, very stealthily and cautiously follow them so he can see what's going on.
So, Mel, he wheels out the body. He looks at you and says, "So what kind of scientist are
you?" I want to make an intelligence check to see what kind of scientist would deal with dead bodies. Because I can't think of one.
A mortician?
A mortician.
But he is a mortician. So.
You're right. So, like, I feel something else besides a mortician. Plus 4. Yeah, that's when I touch plus 4. So that's a 19.
So you know that there could be perhaps a coroner. You know that he's just a simple coffin maker. It's not likely that he's actually a coroner.
Okay. I'm a coroner.
He looks at you and he says, "You're right." He kind of like lifts up the leather shawl and reveals to you a pretty splendid looking body. Look, it looks like it passed away no more than a day or two ago.
Okay, so this has all the flesh.
All the flesh on it, yeah.
That's probably the best I'm going to be able to get.
He looks at you and says, "Look, to take a look."
Yes, please.
So he kind of like, he like pushed through the gurney and like steps away and leans up and says, "Look, tea, I make tea."
"Oh, I would love some tea, please."
He turns around and he starts opening up cabinets. He pulls out like a little tea box and he pulls out a couple like little packets with some pre-made tea bags inside of it.
And he starts
boiling water on one of the beakers.
And so I go up to the body and just start like, have they done an autopsy?
No, there's no seam down the center.
All right. And so
the body's actually still clothed. They haven't even like removed the clothing on.
All right. I check the teeth. All right, so I'm doing that thing where it's like I'm looking, I like open the eyes and like turn the head back and forth and like open the mouth.
It's like what they do with like livestock, but you're doing it with a dead body.
Yeah.
Don't look a gift body in the mouth.
Alrighty. Like, so you lean, or
so
not.
You lean down and you like peel the eyes back and you turn the head left to right, and as you reach inside and like peel its lips forth, it lunges up and bites onto your. I assume that's 23
hits. Oh.
I need a con save.
Oh, fuck me.
Ian, do I see this?
No, you're not in the.
Oh, okay. So.
Holy shit! Roll the 20.
I see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you do get bit. Oh, let's see here. You take 1d6 plus 2d6 damage. So, 4 plus 3 is 7. 13 plus 5 is 18 points of damage. As he bites you on the neck. Instead of being inflicted with vampirism, you gain a level of exhaustion.
Great. Oh.
The vampire drinks, and you lose feeling of your legs.
Perfect.
That's super unfortunate.
The vampire does not let go of your throat, but instead, you see claws on his neck, on his fingers extend, and like basically come right up to your temple. As if the man behind says, "Do not try. You think you would kill it."
Am I still standing?
No, you lost feeling of your legs. You basically collapsed down on the ground. You have control of your upper torso. There's a vampire who's like got the kill strike on your temple with his nails ready to go, and he's still clamped onto your neck.
I'm just like, what the hell is going on here?
He turns and looks at you, and he says, "I knew you'd come. Where is Aileen?"
How the fuck should I know?
Because you were with her. He turns around with the boiling water. He throws it on your face.
Hey, Ian. sorry.
You take 3 points of damage of boiling
water. Boiling water damage is the worst kind of damage.
At that point, if I didn't scream before, I'm definitely screaming now. Yeah.
So, DJ, you since with that perception check, you were getting a pretty vivid. You hear screaming and the sounds of collapsing, and Mel is just like, "Why the fuck would I know?" Because you were with her. And then you hear the sounds of like splashing, and Mel is just like, "What is this?"
Okay, well, I. All right, so. I guess if I go out of the room that I'm in, right, I will see Mel.
Yeah, he's correct. You're basically, the doorway to the hall is shut. Mm-hmm. The door he came in, he shut it. You didn't know that he locked it or not, and you're pretty sure he didn't.
Yeah.
You slowly feel your legs kind of coming back too, and it's almost like that bite kind of like rocked you for a second, around to be perfectly accurate. You feel your legs slowly kind of start to creep back into your possession, but you feel completely at the mercy of this vampire in the man right now. So he looks at you and he casts Cure Minor Wounds on you. He heals you for a point.
1 point.
Mm-hmm. You see, he looks at you and says, "Do not make me ask you again. Where is Irina?" Actually, hang on, DJ. What do you? So yeah. Now, DJ, you walk over and you open up the door, right?
Stealthily, yes.
Yeah. So you poke your head at the door and you don't see any of the vampire spawn in the hallway. It looks like they're not even hiding in the hallway. Even when you have a very perceptive look and you don't see or hear anything.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I'm gonna go toward where I heard no screaming, stealthily.
Mm-hmm. So you approach
the door. To clarify,
it's like a 5 foot walk from one side of the hallway to the other.
Okay.
You walk up and you see the door handle. There's a keyhole and it's like a big wooden door with like a nice like etching of like flowers upon it.
There's a door.
And you hear Mel screaming, and then screams are slightly tamed as a song. And right. Again, reassert the question to Mel.
So, my laying on.
Yeah.
Okay. And this vampire is attached.
Yeah, he's grappled on you.
Okay. He's just chewing his toy. Okay. I'm just gonna be like, fuck you. I'm gonna give him the middle finger and then open my hand and then cast a firebolt in my hand and just shove it in the face of the vampire.
Alright, so the vampire was waiting for you to do something. The vampire is going to instantly put you in a death save. You may fire your firebolt.
Alright.
You're just straight to zero. He impales your temple.
Well, plus 8, 20.
You hit him.
Awesome. And that is 14 damage.
Okay. He's going to recover 10 of that in like 6 seconds.
I know. I was just trying to get him off me.
Yeah. No, he had an action ready for you. Mel, he impales your temple, and you go inert and drop onto the ground. Well, you're already on the ground. You kind of like flop, you know?
Yeah.
The vampire pulls his claws free from your temple, and the man kind of like looks at the tea in his hand and hands it to the vampire, and the vampire says, "You've done well." And Heinrich kind of like shakes his head. You can hear the cloth kind of rotating as you hear him kind of like unsettling, shake his head, and kind of shift his weight around. And then Heinrich says, "Fuck you." The vampire looks at him and says, "Oh, don't worry. Drott will be most, most pleased with your work. Did you find the gnome?" And Heinrich says, "There was no gnome. I do not know what you were talking about." There's another member.
Hear this, right?
Yeah, you hear it. You're probably peering through the keyhole at this point, right?
Yeah.
You see Mel lying in a pool of his own blood.
Hold on, just let me think for a second.
So let me know when you want me to make those save. That save.
You can make one.
Okay. That's a fail. That's one fail.
Mel is bleeding out on the ground.
All right. Okay, does the door, can my, like thiefness, like, tell if the door's unlocked or not?
Yeah, you can tell that the door's unlocked.
Dijo sees Mel lying on the ground in a pool of his own blood. And he hears them talking about the gnome. Dijo is going.
We get a consensus from the group right now. Everyone here is listening.
I think that we should let Dijo play his group.
All right.
Let's let him make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Let him make his decision and then judge him afterwards.
We are not there, so we have to let him play his character.
My curiosity is everyone just sitting on the edge of the seat, like, holy shit. This spiraled way out of control.
No, yeah, totally. But I think we let him do his own thing, and then we judge him and make fun of him for it afterwards.
Alright, so... So there's two ways I can go about this.
There's a lot more than two, but if that's what you've relegated...
Well, there's two ways that I'm going to go about this. So Dijo isn't he's smart. He's not the wisest person in the world, right?
Is he?
So he's not. He has a negative one.
Smart to stretch too, but we'll go with it. Sure.
So he knows that if he goes in there, he's probably going to get killed. But he is very mad about what happened to Mel. But the question is he wise enough know of a better way to get in there besides busting down the door, right? So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to roll a d20. 10 through 20 means I sneak in. 1 through 10 would be I bust down the door. 11 through 20, I'll sneak in. That's how I'm going to do this.
My left's on the line, and he's leaving it up to the desk. Good for you, buddy.
The nature of D&D in a nutshell.
Yep.
You know what? Go ahead and give me another roll, Eric.
All right.
DJ's probably standing in the hallway for another 6 seconds going, man, that's bad.
Oh, that's a pass. That's one pass. One pass, one fail.
So, what'd you roll, DJ? He's being quiet. What'd you roll?
I rolled a 9.
So what does that mean?
He's busting it?
I already said it. So yeah, Dijo knows where the vampire is, right?
Yes.
Dijo's going to open the door, pull out his bow, and shoot him in the face.
So, Dijo, as you're ready to get the door, give me a perception check.
A perception check?
Yes.
Okay. Uh, 17.
All right, DJ. As you go to kick the, you look to your right and you see a human male with long blonde flowing hair, clean shaven face, reach up, grab you by the throat, lift you up into the air, squeeze your throat, and say, "You will die."
He tells me that he says, "You will die."
He motions to the door with his don't, and shakes his head.
He just like, and he calms down. He's like, and he, like, you can see in DJ's face that he calms down. He's more calm than he was like 5 seconds ago.
He looks at you and he says, "Come, your friend is already dead."
Who is this guy?
You ask
like,
him?
Do I recognize him?
No.
I ask, who are you?
He says, "My name is Tarthus, but we don't have time for this. Come on." He grabs you by the hand and starts walking down the steps with you. What do you do?
I guess. I say, we can't leave Mel behind.
We will come back for his body. Unless you'd like me to come back for...
DJ looks at him and he's like, "All right, let's go."
DJ, you step away and you kind of like exit down to the bottom floor, and you see in the bottom floor there are 6 vampires staked in their coffins, or 5 vampires staked in their coffins.
Oh. I say, can we not go get him now?
He looks back to you and says, "These are just spawn. That one above is one of Strahd's court. He would fail you in an instant."
I guess you're right.
But your friends would make a difference.
All right.
Sorry about the squeak.
I don't know why, but I trust you.
He says, "You're a fool to trust him. But you don't have a choice at this moment, do you?"
Not really.
Unless you'd like to go back up and die.
I suppose there wouldn't be any point in that.
No, give me a save.
And that's a fail.
Alrighty.
Well,
So he exits the shop, motioning for you to follow.
I hesitate, but I go.
Okay. So, cutting back, the guy leans down, and he's going to stabilize you and awaken you, but leave you incapacitated.
Okay.
So, the vampire is standing over you, and Heinrich is looking at you. His face has gone from stern and almost businesslike to completely terrified. The vampire leans over, and he says, "My associate will not be questioning you anymore. You have two questions to answer for me, and you may walk away from this place. Or, alternatively, you don't answer them, and you become my spawn."
I'm guessing I have like a little bit of blood in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Spit in his face.
You see him kind of like touch the blood on his face, and he looks at you with a smile, and he licks it. And he says, "Oh, you tipped me so much." He reaches down, and you see him lick the blood off your chin.
Okay.
He grabs you by the throat, and he lifts you up, and he kind of like, in a very vampire seductive way, not necessarily a seductive way, like sexy. Yeah. He like sniffs your throat and graces your skin with his fangs. And he says, "Where is Irina?"
It's gonna be like, "Left that bitch dead in the ditch before we got here." And I'll give it deception. That is a 14.
You see him look at you with a bit of surprise in his eye. He kind of shakes it off a moment. He goes like, "Even if that were true, she's been bitten already. She will just turn in a matter of days."
Well, then go find her.
Does that news that she's been bitten surprise you or take you off guard?
A little bit, but I'm trying to act cool.
Give me a deception check again.
That is a 12.
Alrighty. You're able to hide it.
Yeah.
Better than he can detect it anyway. You see him kind of study your face looking for that shocked appearance that he wanted from you. And when you don't look shocked and appalled, he kind of scowls a bit and sniffs. He goes like,
"The meat does not taste as good. There's no fear running through the veins. Do you not fear me, human?"
"Fear a lot of things. Bitchy ass vampire? Not one of them."
"Strahd is not the only vampire with power here, human. Will regret this decision to fight me."
"I'm not fighting you. Or at least not at this point."
"But you will fight for me."
"For you?"
He sinks his teeth into you. You're going to fail to save. You're incapacitated. So you die from the bite.
Great.
He kind of like drops your... and says,
"Give it a few hours. Their friends will see him again."
So, fade to black. So, DJ, you return running down the street. You're a little way from Tarthus as you're running up, and you see basically the group. You see Davros, Amnon, Watts, and Norik exiting the front of the tavern.
DJ, where the fuck have you been?
He just very distraught, and he says I followed Mel.
Well, where is he? Come on, we're leaving to go to the winery.
He's dead.
Beg your pardon?
He's... there, we went to the casket place, and the owner led him up to the top of the building, and the body that he brought Mel was actually a vampire. He killed him.
We got to go back for him, right?
That's what. Yes. Do you think we can kick the guy that killed him's ass, or?
DJ looks up. He says, I don't know. I almost went in there and got myself killed. So this fellow calmed me down. But I still kind of regret not going in there.
You see a guy in full black armor with long blonde hair kind of flowing down the side of his head. A very youthful appearance to him. Those of you that are human, look at him and see that he's no more than 18 years of age or so. I guess there's nobody here human, huh?
Nope, yeah, Mel was our only human.
Not anymore. I'm half human.
How old does he look?
Oh shit, does this mean Mel gets dark vision?
It's already an upgrade.
What a relief.
About time we can stop casting light on all of our shit.
I'm still gonna do it. That's the everyone takes away.
Oh, it's dark vision.
Oh, this is amazing. Fuck you guys.
So I look at the guy that DJ came back with, and I'm like, we're going back, right?
I'm like, hell yeah, we're going back.
There's a ruling on it right there. It'll seem strong, but I don't care. Thematic. So, the man, like, studies you guys, and he says,
I think that it might be wise that you don't go back there, but if you are insistent upon finding your friend, then you should go back now.
Look. I don't think we have much of a choice in this case. I think we need to go back.
We're not leaving anybody behind. We gotta go back.
Or at least getting revenge.
You see Jameson come out the front door, look at you guys, and he says,
well, if I might intrude, I think you might need this if your friend has encountered a vampire.
He digs into his bag and he pulls out what looks to be like a small vial of holding water. And he takes a small thing out of his bag and it looks to be like some sort of strange contraption. It looks similar to like that of maybe a musket. And he loads the dart into a small cartridge in his hand and claps it into the magazine, claps it into the bottom of the musket-shaped item, and he extends it to one of you, and he says, it takes a dexterous hand to aim it, so I'd recommend you be careful.
DJ, take it.
Yeah, DJ takes it.
He looks at you and says, that is for your friend, or for the vampire that did him, to give him the courtesy of death.
Okay.
He looks
at just nods and
he looks at and says, it did not work on straw. It might work on one of those too.
Well, we'll have to try.
He kinda tips his hat and says, I'll be on my way. Best of luck to you. This is exactly what happened to us. He turns back and walks into the group and you see Liz kinda standing there in the doorway. She looks a little bit somber with her right hand kind of placed on like the upper half of her left shoulder, looking down at the ground, and she looks up at you guys and she says, it's not too late to save him. Not if you really want him. She turns back and shuts the door of the tavern.
All right, we're doing this.
Let's go. Yeah.
I must say, I'm going to turn to Watt. What, in, just in case, what spells do you have prepared for today?
Enough. As I, like, just draw my weapon and start walking down.
Specifically, do you have Revivify prepared for today? In case we need it.
Actually, I do. But that only works for a very short time after death.
I'm not necessarily talking about Mel in this case.
That's fair. Alright.
Alright.
And he's not talking about Shu either.
Alright guys, let's go.
So, right. As you guys are, like, leaving, you see Irina poke her head. She said, "Wait, I'm coming with you."
Dijo mentions to Irina that her location was the reason was. Or well, I just tell her what happened there. You know, basically, like, you know, Mel was trying to hide your location, so that way they wouldn't find you. Essentially,
she looks at the group and she says, "And that means that I should stay here. That he is dead because of me, and I am to stay here and do nothing." That's ridiculous.
That's none of us said that.
Saying that you shouldn't come. You can come if you want to. I just want to let you know why he died.
She says, "Then it is settled. I am coming."
All right. That's fine with me.
All right, come on. We're wasting time. Let's go.
All righty. So you guys probably go and. Sprint down the streets to the coffee maker shop.
Yep. All right.
Of course.
I don't want to go like busting headlong in there. I want to kind of be a little sneaky about it. I think we should take our time with it.
Yeah. We're gonna take our time getting in there.
So you guys notice that as you're running across the town, you notice that like. All of a sudden, it feels like you're running on a treadmill for a moment. Like, you're running, and the building's moving beside you, but the road itself seems like it's not moving. And you notice that the sky above you turns from maybe midday to stark night, as you see clouds part and stars suddenly come rotating like it's on a wheel above you, to the pale blue moonlight that now shines down above you. Roll a canter checks for those of you who might have an inclination of what have happened.
Would that be basically anybody who's proficient?
Yes.
That's not me.
DJ's just like,
Is anybody here proficient in Arcana?
Oh, no.
I am. I think the best chance of learning it because it's an intelligence-based roll.
I mean, I probably would. It wouldn't be worth the roll for me.
I'll do it. DJ, still have a +3 to intelligence, so I mean,
Nork should have a +4 to it, right?
Oh.
Because of his...
My intelligence is 19, but it's not one of my proficiencies.
How does a 5 do for me?
Jesus.
I rolled a natural 2.
Yeah.
Natural.
Ian.
Yes.
Can I roll an Arcana check since I have that Vistani band of intellect, even though intelligence is not one of my proficiencies?
Oh, yeah, no, you can always roll it. The party, hey, roll an Arcana check. You may still roll it.
Right on.
Yeah, right. So you have a +4.
Ah.
To all intelligence checks, even if Arcana is still there.
Okay, let's roll. It failed. So there's that.
What'd you pull?
Pull a 1.
He rolled a nat 1.
The rest of spaghetti. Everybody should at least roll. Should at least.
I rolled a 4.
Alright, it'll be bad.
I rolled a nat 19 +1, 20.
Hey!
I mean, I rolled an 18 -1, so fuck it.
Yeah. That's why you should always just roll, because if somebody who's good at it doesn't, at least somebody who's bad at it has the same opportunity to not know it as good as them. So, Amnon and Nork, you both look up and see, not Nork, sorry, Amnon and Davros look up and see the sky changing. You recognize alteration magic centered somewhere ahead of you. You notice that somebody has cast a spell to expedite the day. It seems almost as though 8 hours have suddenly passed. What was once almost noon has now made it 8 o'clock in the evening.
Nice. Would we know the fact that, like, has it actually excelled that amount of time, or is it just Strahd fucking with us? Would we know that?
This is probably a concrete ritual. This is a real thing.
Okay. Fuck.
I don't want to waste dispel magic, but would it be worth anything?
I would not waste dispel magic. It only works on a certain spell level below.
Pretty sure that's like a high-ass level spell.
Oh. Yeah, you're right.
Alright. Does it still feel like, as we move forward, does it still feel like we're walking on that treadmill?
No, it looks like after that spell has finished moving time that you're able to move forward. You also feel like you've oddly kind of like relaxed and rested for the full day. Like you've not been doing anything. It feels like you got like a nice rest and like perhaps maybe even that like your day went on as you autopiloted around not doing anything. And then all of a sudden you feel like your faculties are suddenly back. Only notice the change, really. Everybody else kind of feels like you just naturally progressed to 8 in the evening.
I was going to kind of point this out, do we just accelerate in time?
Davros, you noticed it.
Yeah, I don't like this.
Well, what's happening?
Who else was it that noticed?
It was just me and you, man.
Yeah. Like, you saw that, right?
Yeah, I saw it. I felt it. I don't like this. I don't like this at all. I don't... Going forward, especially with what we're doing, we need to be extremely careful.
You notice that there's a chill wind and snow starts to fall around you guys. You can hear shutters closing in the distance. So, you guys head to the coffee shop now, right?
Yes, cautiously.
All right. You guys enter into the small square where the coffin maker shop is, and who pushes the door first?
I'll go for it.
So, you kind of take a couple creeping steps up the doorway. What? And, you get this almost divine / unearthly sense that one of the objectives in your life lies on the other side of this door. Like, something that you exist for exists on the other side of this door.
All right. Like, I just turn around and ask, all right, guys, we ready?
You got everything.
Ijo nods.
All right.
As if he's a cool anime character.
I summon my scimitar into my hand.
I turn around as if and like start walking up the stairs and then stop. Then I turn around and be like, the door, or should we enter quietly?
Irina says, fuck that! Kick the door down!
Hey,
wait, hold on.
Kick the door down.
No,
what? Stop.
Nope, too late.
What kicks the door down? So the door collapses onto the floor, and you see inside the coffin maker, three men standing. You see what looks to be like a man. DJ, you instantly recognize him. Same shape, same body style, but he's now wearing proper clothing. He's not underneath a gurney blanket or anything. A man with like it's like a V. It's like an arrow tip shaped cape on his back that kind of comes down to halfway on his back. okay. and kind of folds around his shoulders, and he's got a cut like a collar that's kind of like folded up, you know, a stereotypical vampire cloak.
Okay.
And he's got a rapier and some nice black slacks and some black boots. He turns to look at you guys, and he's wearing like this like crimson vest over a white shirt.
It's all a card.
All right, question. Would I have time to cast a spell like as soon as I kick the door in?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I'm going to fairy fire on those three.
You cast what?
Fairy fire.
Oh, okay.
They have to make a dex saving throw.
So you cast fairy fire. So what? You cast fairy fire, and as it zips across the room, you see a hand and a cowl just dash out and just disperse the fairy fire in midair, splattering it across several coffins on the ceiling and on the floor, but not touching any of them.
Disappointed, but not surprised.
You see the man turn and look at you, and you recognize Mel. Mel looks Mel turns and looks at you, and you see him cock an eyebrow, and he says, "Is that the do what?" You see him kind of like give a smirk as you see a fang stick out the side of his.
Oh no!
Edgy.
You see the vampire was originally there. Turn and look at you. And he crosses his arms and he says, "Let me guess, you are what? And Nordic, and none, and Deja. Is this correct?"
Don't forget you would Davros, be correct. You asshole.
I'm sorry, he's just so quiet. It's hard to notice that he's there.
Hey, I was okay with being left out of this one.
I thought you would be. So tell me, if you brought Irina to, or are you to pry her from your cold dead hands as well?
Something like that.
You see him turn and look over it.
Well, we can't let that happen, can we, Mel?
Mel looks and says, "No, I guess we can't." You see Mel kind of step forward to you guys, and you see him kind of like shirk off his shoulder cowl that he owns, and crack his neck left and right. And you see a fireball burst into his right hand and claws stretch out into his left hand.
All right.
Is he going to...
You hear him go, "Oh, fuck."
I take a very defensive stance. I got scimitar in one hand, and I'm kind
of
like cooking some eldritch energy in my left.
I'm preparing to cast magic.
Watt dives out the guy in heavy armor is like, "Oh, fuck," and drops like 3 feet away.
I'm preparing to cast.
What does Dijo do?
Dijo dives out of the way.
So at almost a lightning like speed, you see Mel kind of like shift in place, like an after image left there. You see the floorboards rip and split down the center as Mel suddenly appears right next to DJ. Grab DJ in the throat, look at DJ, and they say, "I'll save you for last." And you see him just sucker punch DJ in the jaw. DJ goes sailing through the roof of the first floor up into the second floor.
Thank
God.
Oh, by the way.
Am I conscious?
Huh? Yeah, you're conscious.
Am I conscious?
Yeah, you're okay. Conscious. But you do take. That's almost max damage. 11 plus 8. 19 points of damage. Jump onto the second floor.
Just. Can someone quickly do 34 minus 19? Because that. No, that's a.
15,
thanks. I'm bad at math.
You guys see Mel wink as he leaps up into the second floor after DJ.
Who, Mel does?
Yeah, Mel winks at the group and leaps up. You see the coffin maker look at you guys, and you see him kind of like draw just a plain looking like club off his hip.
I'm just going to look at the two over there and be like, what did you do to him?
You look at the vampire as he kind of chuckles and says,
I removed all inhibition. A monster walked amongst you. I simply let him off the leash.
All right, well, fuck you. go ahead.
I was going to say, so we're pretty much out of time for this episode. We'll have to pick up a combat next turn and see what happens to Mel and the party.
Woo!
Damn.
All right, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Dungeon. I was really excited about this twist today. I wasn't sure if it was going to happen to Mel or DJ. I didn't know what was going to happen. Got shot. I just knew that there was... Someone was like, hey, there's a fuck ton of vampire spawn on this coffin maker. You should definitely do something fun with that. I was like, oh, I could think of something fun.
Well, I think it'd be kind of cool if Eric still controlled Mel for this combat.
I think so as well. That'd be cool.
Well,
role-playing...
Mel's not dead.
Eric.
Yeah, Mel's not dead. Eric's...
Yeah.
You'll see. Tune in next week and you'll find out what's going on with that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm excited. All the juicy stuff out. All
right. Thank you guys so much for listening to Your Daily Dungeon episode 19. Shit. Someone got fucked. And it wasn't DJ.
I did not expect that, but...
Yeah, sometimes shit like that just happens. Drive. We're like, this was not supposed to be dangerous. This is supposed to be a shop.
I just wanted a skeleton. I just wanted something for my subclass, and I died.
Welcome to Strahd. Oh. Like, mundane day-to-day routines are like, I could possibly fucking die today. Now you know what it's like to be a real Barovian. I went to the store and I fucking murdered. All right, we'll catch you guys later. Thanks for listening.